Hey, good morning, everybody. Welcome to Bio 231, and it is April 8th. We're going to finish up peripheral nervous system. We're almost done with that, just a couple little things, and then move on to autonomic nervous system. And does anybody know what the coolest thing about the autonomic nervous system is? Something that's really amazing about it? It controls everything in your body except skeletal muscle. Everything else controlled by autonomic nervous system. So it's hugely important from that respect. All right, those of you that have lab later this afternoon, be sure to bring a sweatshirt and maybe gloves because it's really cold in that room. All right, that's why I'm just trying to warm up with a sweatshirt on. Okay, so what are some announcements? All the lectures are online. I'll try to get this one up and try to listen to the lecture again soon after the real-time lecture. That will make the most sense. And the same thing for the videos for practicums. Try to look at a video right after you look at the models, right? So if you pay attention in lab and look at the models and then wait a couple weeks to look at the video, it won't have the same kind of impact. Right, you'll be spending the same amount of time, but you just won't be learning the same amount of material. So try to review it close to when you're actually handling those models. Okay, had some questions about iPads and iPhones. People are having difficulty viewing the practicum videos on those mobile devices because if you click on the video, it just doesn't play. Try to right-click to download it to one of those devices. That just doesn't work. So, and it just rang a bell. The way that it works is that you need an app, right? Mobile devices, you need an application. So go to the Apple Store, and there are free apps, free downloaders. Video Downloader was one that I found in Google. I haven't downloaded it yet, but that might be something that you can try, all right? The other thing is, for iPads and iPhones, their whole key file management system is iTunes. So there's probably a way in iTunes also to download videos and play them. But if they're on iTunes, I'm not sure that you would be able to get it to play in VLC. Right? It probably is just a better way to use a third-party video downloader to do that. Okay, I haven't done it, but as soon as I do it, I'll let you know how to do it. All right, let's look at the schedule. On the right-hand side, so today is the 8th, Wednesday, and next Wednesday is 1 week away, and after that is the third exam. So the third exam is a week and a half away, right? And that's going to be on a Monday. That's the same day that we're going to start practicums, the third practicum. So the Monday labs will have a lecture exam and a practicum on the same day. The 8 o'clock will have a practicum, then the lecture exam. The afternoon lab will have the lecture exam and then the practicum. So don't be caught unaware of that. I've mentioned that a couple times. So that's the Monday labs. Then the Wednesday have their labs on Wednesday like usual. All right, but let's go down to the very last day, May 20th. That's the last day of school. And then, since it's a Wednesday, the Wednesday labs will have a practicum and a lecture exam on the same day. All right, so it's the same. Whether you're in a Monday or a Wednesday lab, you have to take a lecture exam and a practicum on the same day. All right. Anybody got a question about that? Chapters that are on the test, any of that kind of stuff? No? Okay. So we were in peripheral nervous system, and I have all the lights on that I can turn on. I'm going to try to, and some of the lights are burned out or the switch isn't working, so I want to turn some of these lights down so you can see the screen. That might be a little too dark. Should we try that? Is that too dark? Okay, let's try that. All right, so we were talking about plexis last time. And what is a plexus? I'll show you a picture of a cervical plexus. We know this is cervical plexus because what's the origin of all these nerves? C1, C2, C3, C4, C5, right? So it's got to be cervical, it can't be lumbar. And so here we see a bunch of nerves leaving, and it makes this network. That network we call a plexus. And what's the beauty of a plexus? I think I mentioned it last time. Yeah. Perfect, perfect. That means that there are ways that nerve impulses can get to a vital organ, or there are numerous ways it can. Like, for instance, the diaphragm is an important muscle for breathing. The diaphragm is innervated by the phrenic nerve, and you see that the phrenic nerve gets information from C3, C4, and C5. Right? If it was just C5, if there is damage at the level of C4, then the person couldn't breathe. And of course, you know what that would be like, right? But since C3 would still be operating, the person still would be able to breathe, right? So the purpose of a nerve plexus is to withstand a lot of damage. It provides alternate routes for nerve impulses to get from the central nervous system to an important organ in your body that you need to stay alive. Okay, so, and in particular, you should know the origin of the phrenic nerve, right? And in your lecture notes, you see it, C3, 4, and 5. And when you look at figure 14.8, right, you can actually trace it out, right? Here's C3, there's a part, here's C4, and then here is C5. Well, if you don't have this figure available, how are you going to remember what the origin of the phrenic nerve is? Yeah, so there's a little saying, right? We mentioned last time, C3, 4, and 5 keeps you alive because you need that diaphragm to breathe, right? And so that keeps you alive. So here's cervical plexus. Let's look at all the plexes the major ones that I want you to know anyway, okay? So here we see spinal cord, and then here we see peripheral nerves. And notice we were just looking at the cervical nerve plexus, and here it is on the diagram, right? So this is the cervical region. Then starting right over here, this is the brachial plexus. And then here is, what would you call this plexus right over here? Lumbar plexus, fantastic. And then the sacral plexus. All right, so those are the four plexes that I want you to know, and of course you might have to pick them out in lab as well. We have some nice models of these various nerves. All right, so the sciatic nerve is another important nerve. A lot of people have impingement on the sciatic nerve, and it creates a lot of pain, maybe in their leg or their foot or toes. So let's see how that can possibly happen. Well, it comes from the lumbar. All right, so where's the lumbar plexus? Here's the lumbar plexus, and those nerves go all the way down, right, to your extremity. But if there's damage to a nerve, in this area, sensory nerve, any place in this plexus, then you might feel some pain, even though there's nothing wrong with your foot, your ankle, your toe, right? So that's just referred pain. So let's take a look at that lumbar plexus. Lumbar plexus. I showed you, I tell you what, we saw sacral plexus. Let's just pull that up. It's easy to get to the next one. So here's 14.8. That's the sacral plexus. All right. Then 14.9B. Here is the brachial plexus. All right. And then if we scoot ahead a couple more slides, I'm going to have to jump over a whole bunch of slides to get to the lumbar plexus. All right. So here's the lumbar plexus. That's 14.13A. And I want you to know the sciatic nerve. And the sciatic nerve comes from L4, 5, S1, okay, and S2. So 4 and 5, so the sciatic nerve, right, is going to come right out of this piece right here, lumbosacral trunk. That's not a nerve, that's just a trunk. All right, so let's go to the sacral plexus. All right, so here is the sacral plexus. So here's L4, 5. Here is sacral 1 and 2. And notice that they all come together right here to form the sciatic nerve. Right, sciatic nerve. Okay, so what do we got? 4, 5, S1, and S2 make up the sciatic nerve. And you'll use that little trick to be able to identify the sciatic nerve compared to, like, the femoral nerve, right? Because the femoral nerve doesn't have any sacral component to it at all. Okay. All right, so let's relate some of these nerves to a dermatome. What the heck is a dermatome? A dermatome is the surface on your body. It's an area on the surface of your body that is innervated by one nerve. So here is a dermatome. Here's an anterior view. All right, so if there is damage to the nerve leaving at L3, then this region of the body would have no sensation, or maybe it would have an altered sensation, maybe pain, right? And also, exactly from that same level, this is where the motor fibers exit the spinal cord. Right, so I had mentioned before when we were talking about plantar flexion and dorsiflexion. Maybe I'll go to the next No, this is great. Okay, when we're talking about plantar flexion and dorsiflexion and how important it was to just observe people as they get older, and if the tips of their shoes were starting to wear out, then that was a sign that they were dragging their toes over the ground. Right, and so if somebody's dragging their toes over the ground when they're walking, what motion is not operating properly? If you can't lift your toes up off the ground, yeah, that's dorsiflexion, right? And dorsiflexion, right, is due to anterior muscles like the tibialis anterior, not the posterior muscles, right? And I mentioned that if somebody's having trouble dorsiflexing, shown by the scraping of the toes of their shoes, that could be an indication of spinal cord injury, right? And where would somebody start looking? At what level of the spinal cord? Like L5, right? So if somebody can't dorsiflex, there are nerves that are coming from lumbar 5 that go down and innervate that area. And so that's just a clue as to where to start looking for nerve injury, like if you want an MRI or something, right? So if somebody can't dorsiflex, you're probably not so interested in looking around the ankle, you're interested in looking at the spinal cord at this particular level. Right, so that's the importance of this dermatome. Right, it just maps the surface of your body to where a nerve will enter or exit the vertebral column. And you can see it's a little bit strange. All right, and then here is just a posterior view. Where is L5? So L5 in posterior view, right, is more up in the thigh. And over here, okay, L5 wraps around, right, and becomes more anterior. That's just the way it goes. Okay, then we can see it wrapping around anteriorly. So those are dermatomes. Does anybody have a question over this particular chapter? So how are we going to remember your cranial nerves? What's an easy way, relatively easy way to remember cranial nerves? Yeah, use a mnemonic of some kind. Maybe you ran into a good mnemonic that's in your textbook. I gave you one in the lecture notes. And maybe it's even better to make up your own mnemonic, right? Because then it will be even easier to remember. The tests, when I pass them out, you will be able to write on them. So maybe the first thing you do when you get a test booklet is write some mnemonics out before you forget. And then when you get to some questions, go ahead and use those mnemonics. I won't provide any mnemonics for you on the test booklet, right? You got to bring those in. Okay, so I'm going to put peripheral nervous system away. And, oh, what were these dermatome figures? 14.16 A and B. 14.16 A and B that we just got done with. All right, peripheral nervous system. Peripheral nervous system, I'm sorry, autonomic nervous system is Chapter 15, is it chapter 15 in your books? I hope so. Sometimes they change the chapters around on us. Okay, nice. All right, so right before we started lecturing, we said that the autonomic nervous system controls everything in your body except skeletal muscle. And the nervous, does anybody remember what the nervous system is called that controls skeletal muscle? It's called the somatic. That's right. Somatic means body. Soma means body. And in this particular sense, the somatic nervous system goes to the surface of your body, not deep visceral cavities. So that's what we mean by that. All right. Autonomic nervous system controls involuntary or self-governing systems in the body. And so what are some things that are controlled that you don't have to think about all the time, every second? Your nervous system thinks about it, but not your consciousness. It is breathing. Yeah, this is true. When you're sleeping, you don't stop breathing when you lose consciousness, right? There's an automatic part of the respiratory center that takes over. And the interesting thing about that is that that's an example of how the rule is violated. That's an exception to the rule. The phrenic nerve is not part of the autonomic nervous system, but there's a special part of your brain that takes over. Right? The diaphragm, you still can control the diaphragm voluntarily. Like right now, if you wanted to hold your breath, you could, right, until you passed out. And then after you pass out, you would start breathing again. So that's kind of a funny interface between the autonomic nervous system and the somatic nervous system. What's maybe another example? Yeah, heart rate. You can't really control your heart rate. You can't control your blood pressure, but then your autonomic nervous system helps regulate these things. And pupil dilation or constriction would be some good examples. Whether that erector pili muscle is going to contract or not, to give you goosebumps, right? That's involuntarily controlled. So there are like almost everything in your body. Glands, salivary glands, are controlled by autonomic nervous system and other glands. All right, so let's do a nice comparison of the somatic or voluntary nervous system with the autonomic nervous system. All right, so here was, how do I get this to show? Nice. I thought I could just click on it. Here it is. All right, so this is similar to that first diagram that I gave you in the introductory chapter of nervous system. And you know, central nervous system to be brain and spinal cord, right? But now we're in the peripheral areas, and peripheral, right, would be motor. So we're going to look at motor. We got the somatic to the effector organ would be skeletal muscle. Motor to autonomic nervous system, some of those effector organs will be cardiac muscle, smooth muscle, and glands, right? And we could pick some specific examples. Now, how would you want to break the autonomic nervous system down? Can we break it down into some components? Okay, we see it on this flow diagram plus the one that I gave you before. Autonomic nervous system can be broken down into sympathetic and parasympathetic nervous system. And when I see these two divisions, it reminds me of the biceps brachii and the triceps brachii. Or maybe the rectus femoris and the biceps femoris. Or maybe the gas pedal and brake pedal in my car. What's the relationship between all of those things? Yeah, they're antagonistic. So sympathetic and parasympathetic nervous system, in most cases, are antagonistic to each other. All right, so if you know the function of one division, like the sympathetic nervous system on the heart is excitatory, then you'd pretty much automatically know what the effect of the parasympathetic nervous system is on the heart. So if sympathetic is excitatory, what can you tell me about parasympathetic? It will be inhibitory, right? So sympathetic will increase heart rate, parasympathetic will decrease heart rate. And you might find that that doesn't work very well, but just remember, your gas pedal and brake pedal, you got to have both. And same thing for the heart, that's very important. All right, so here is a nice diagram, and this might be an exam figure, 15.2. And I think it is an exam figure. I'm almost positive it is. So when we look at this figure, let's break it down into some of its components. What are we comparing? All right, let's look at the top row. All right, there's just one row in this top piece over here. This is the somatic nervous system. And it's motor, the motor somatic nervous system. What's the effector organ for somatic nervous system? Skeletal muscle. Here I see some skeletal muscles, right? And in every case, when you send nerve impulses to a skeletal muscle, it is going to contract. So we say stimulatory or excitatory. Right? We can't really inhibit skeletal muscles voluntarily. There might be some reflexes that happen unconsciously, but consciously we can only cause a muscle to contract. All right. Oh, I suppose you can cause this biceps to relax. You can cause it to contract or relax. All right. So here's the effector organ out in the periphery. Over here in this column, this represents the central nervous system. All right, and it's probably a nice beige color. That beige color is central nervous system. And then I can see this neuron leaving the central nervous system, going into the peripheral nervous system to this effector organ. So how many neurons does it take for a somatic outflow to go from central nervous system to an effector organ? Just takes one. Do you remember what kind of neuron this is? By shape, what kind of neuron? It is a multipolar neuron, multipolar. Here are a bunch of very short dendrites, cell body, and one long axon, right? And what else can you tell me about this axon? There's something special about it. It is myelinated, that's right. So these nerve impulses move very fast down this axon to this distant location to cause this skeletal muscle to contract. Okay, so there is a synapse. I don't see a synapse over here, but there's going to be synapses. There's going to be other neurons telling this somatic neuron, giving it some information. Right. And then here is the junction between the neuron and the skeletal muscle. And does anybody know what that junction is called? Right. It's going to allow communication between the neuron and the muscle. Yes, this is what we call the neuromuscular junction. It's a special kind of synapse. It's a special kind of synapse. And remember, there are two kinds of synapses. There's electrical and chemical. And so I would want you to tell me the neuromuscular junction is what kind of synapse? Is it chemical or electrical? Yeah, and here you see acetylcholine. That's the chemical that's carrying information from the neuron to the skeletal muscle. So this is an example of a typical chemical synapse. And remember, what's the structural and functional unit of communication between cells called? That's a synapse, right? Because the neuron is communicating with that skeletal muscle. So acetylcholine is the neurotransmitter. So we're going to compare these items to the autonomic nervous system now. Like, where are the cell bodies located? Okay. Are the axons myelinated? How many neurons it takes to get to an autonomically controlled organ, what the neurotransmitter is, and then, of course, you should know some examples of effector organs. So let's get effector organs out of the way first. We said for somatic outflow, it is skeletal muscle. What is it for autonomic outflow? Smooth muscle, like we see in the digestive tract. Nice. Cardiac muscle, that's different than smooth. You should probably have a picture in your mind histologically why they're different. And then we have various glands right here. So smooth muscle, cardiac muscle, and glands are the effector organs of the autonomic nervous system. And what's special about these effector organs? What do they do? What do they produce? What do they produce? They produce a response. Right, an effector organ always produces a response. Response of the sympathetic nervous system on cardiac muscle will be to increase the activity of the heart. Okay? Parasympathetic will be to decrease the activity of the heart. Okay, so effector organ always produces a response. And so here is the autonomic nervous system. We have three rows, right? For somatic, we just had one, but for autonomic outflow, we have two. Let's go all the way down to the bottom row on figure 15.2. And so here is central nervous system. I see a cell body. And then we have these effector organs over here. The question is, how many neurons does it take to get information to these effector organs from the central nervous system? How many neurons? Yeah, you see two. And then here, so here's the first one. Here's the second one. And where's the cell body of the second neuron? Is it in the central nervous system or peripheral nervous system? Do you see it in the peripheral nervous system? So in real life, you're not going to have just one neuron, all right, and one neuron over here. You're going to have groups of thousands of neurons, right? So there's going to be thousands of cell bodies someplace, and that's going to form a little structure. And what do we call a group of nerve cell bodies and dendrites in the peripheral nervous system? Yeah, that's going to be a ganglion. It's even labeled on this slide, so that's kind of nice, right? The same group of nerve cell bodies and dendrites in the central nervous system is not called a ganglion. It's called, what is it called? The gray matter. It's called a nucleus, that's right, like the basal nuclei. Okay, so a ganglion is just the counterpart of a nucleus, but it's in the peripheral nervous system. Okay. So how do these cells communicate with each other? Via a synapse. What kind of synapse do you see operating? Okay, I see acetylcholine, that's a neurotransmitter, right? So the synapse in this ganglia is a chemical synapse. And even the second neuron over here is releasing neurotransmitter, right? So what kind of synapse is between the second neuron and an effector organ? It's a chemical synapse as well, okay. All right, so I got to start using the proper terminology for these two neurons that we see in an autonomic outflow pathway. Since this is the ganglion here, we're going to call the first neuron the preganglionic cell, and the one that originates in the ganglion is what we're going to call the postganglionic cell. So we got pre and post, sort of like pre and post central gyrus. All right. When I look at the preganglionic nerve fiber, all right, there's something special about the axon. What can you tell me about the axon that you see? It is myelinated. Looks like it's a little bit different, right, compared to the somatic, but I still see Schwann cells. Yep. So nerve impulses move very rapidly. What about the postganglionic fiber? It's not myelinated. All right, so that's one way that you can always tell what the preganglionic and postganglionic fiber is. Let's go all the way up to the second row, right, in the sympathetic nervous system. How many neurons does it take to get to an effector organ? Two. And the preganglionic fiber is myelinated. The postganglionic fiber is not myelinated. Okay, so that follows the same kind of scheme as the parasympathetic outflow. All right. And what is the neurotransmitter in the ganglion between the pre- and postganglionic nerve cell? It's acetylcholine for sympathetic. What about for parasympathetic? It is acetylcholine as well. All right, and so 100% of the time, this first, or the preganglionic fiber is a cholinergic fiber because it releases acetylcholine, right, within the ganglia. And that's also always going to be excitatory. Okay, it's never going to be inhibitory. So that's something that the sympathetic and parasympathetic have in common as well. All right, I want to compare the length of the axon of the preganglionic fiber. What's the length of the sympathetic preganglionic fiber compared to the postganglionic? It's shorter. That's another nice characteristic. The preganglionic nerve fiber for sympathetic is shorter. The nerve fiber for parasympathetic is very long. As a matter of fact, it usually goes all the way to the effector organ, and the ganglia could be on the surface of the effector organ or maybe even inside the effector organ. So that's why it's long. And then that just means that the postganglionic fiber for parasympathetic can be short, right? But because in sympathetic outflow, the preganglionic fiber is short, that means that the postganglionic fiber has to be long to get to wherever it's going to go. All right, so that's a pretty nice comparison. One last thing, maybe there's some more things that will pop into my mind. But let's look at the postganglionic fiber of the sympathetic versus the parasympathetic. Do you see a difference besides the color? I see that they're different colors. It's probably nice if you know what it is. Oh, because it probably, does it match up with this color over here? Probably. This color and this color? Close. Okay. Never mind. But what about the structure of the postganglionic fiber? Sympathetic compared to parasympathetic? Okay, yep, the parasympathetic is shorter. And it has one synaptic knob, or one Bouton terminale. What about the sympathetic nervous fiber? Many, it has many. We say that, right, that is divergent. The signal from one sympathetic neuron can go to many places to carry a sympathetic signal, right? But for the parasympathetic, one nerve fiber only goes to one location. So that's going to be important in a little bit. All right, so here's a pretty nice overview of the whole autonomic nervous system. All right, and what do we have right here? Let's look at some of these questions on the word slide. What's the effector in a somatic voluntary pathway? Skeletal muscle, right? Hopefully you can make that connection or go back and answer that question. How about another question? What are the effectors of the autonomic or visceral motor pathway? Cardiac muscle, smooth muscle, glands. Yep, that's really nice. And another question. Do you think it would be a good idea to have tonic or antagonistic control over important body functions? Antagonistic means excitatory and inhibitory, neurons going, and tonic just means one excitatory neuron going someplace. What would give you better control, more precise control and balance? Antagonistic, that's right. Okay. All right, so there are two antagonistic divisions, right? And we saw them to be the parasympathetic and the sympathetic nervous system. We saw that on this slide. So let me put this slide away, take a look. All right, let's talk about the parasympathetic nervous system first. We're going to break it down. Okay, the cell bodies are in the central nervous system. Oh, just like what we saw on this slide, right? The cell bodies are in the central nervous system, right? And they either leave, and they leave the central nervous system at the brainstem, right? And in the spinal cord, way down at S2, S3, and S4, right? So these nerves can leave the brain or the spinal cord way down at S2, 3, and 4. So a good question is, we're talking about parasympathetic. Can parasympathetic information leave the central nervous system in the thoracic region from thoracic nerves? No. What about lumbar nerves? No. All right, so this is why sometimes we call the parasympathetic nervous system the cranial sacral autonomic nervous system, because that's where these nerves originate. The cranium, brain, or the sacrum. It has cranial sacral outflow. Right. And the ganglia, we said, is near the target organ because the preganglionic fiber is really long, the postganglionic fiber is short. So what are some of the effects on targets of the parasympathetic nervous system? Well, here, these are the ones, you could memorize every organ, but here are ones that I think are really important and relatively easy to appreciate. So these are the ones that I'm going to pick on. I really want you to know these, right? So these are the ones I want you to memorize. All right, so parasympathetic nervous system does go to the heart. And what's the effect on the heart? It decreases the heart rate, right? So now you could take a guess, what is the effect of the other autonomic nervous system on the heart? It increases, right? Because they're antagonistic to each other. All right, but you can't always tell what the effect of the parasympathetic nervous system is on an organ. You can't always say it's inhibitory because sometimes it is excitatory. For instance, the digestive tract. What's the effect of parasympathetic stimulation of the digestive tract? Increased digestion. So by that I mean increased secretion as well as motility, as well as movement of material through the digestive tract. Okay, well, what would be the sympathetic effect on the digestive system? It's going to inhibit the digestive system. That's right. Okay. In terms of respiration, right, parasympathetic is inhibitory. What's the effect on respiration of the sympathetic? Yeah, it will increase the rate and depth of inspiration. And parasympathetic causes pupil constriction. And take a guess what nervous system causes pupil dilation? The sympathetic nervous system. Okay, so just memorize these, but we're going to go over a general rule comparing and contrasting these two nervous systems, and once you hear that general rule, this thing will make perfect sense, right? So you won't have to just memorize everything. All right, the preganglionic neurotransmitter. What's the preganglionic neurotransmitter? Let's look at figure 15.2, and parasympathetic is, where is parasympathetic? Oh, it's way down over here. All right, do you see the neurotransmitter? Between the pre and post ganglionic fiber, it is acetylcholine, right? Preganglionic uses acetylcholine. What about the post ganglionic neurotransmitter? It is acetylcholine as well. Okay? All right, and so that looks a lot like the somatic outflow pathway because it uses acetylcholine. All right, acetylcholine in the ganglion is always excitatory, but on the effector organ, it can have an inhibitory or excitatory effect, like the example of an inhibitory effect of acetylcholine on the heart is what? It inhibits the heart. Digestive tract, it stimulates digestion, stimulates contraction and secretion. Okay. And here is the way that we would like to characterize the parasympathetic nervous system. Sometimes we call it the rest and digest nervous system. All right, so when you're resting, what can you tell me about your heart rate? Is it high or is it slow? It's slow, right? So that's part of the rest over here. Okay, and when you're not exercising, your digestive system is working full blast, and that's because the parasympathetic nervous system is taking over when you're just relaxed and not doing anything. So anytime you're in a relaxed state, the parasympathetic nervous system effects dominate your body. All right, so when you're in a restful state, what about pupil constriction? When you're just relaxing, do you need to have your pupils dilated so a lot of information comes in? It can be constricted, right? The pupils can be constricted, which restricts light going into your eye, right? And the amount of information that is perceived by those eyes. And when you're not exercising, what about respiration? It can be slow, right? Because when you start to exercise, what happens to respiration? It increases. All right, so let's look at some questions right here. Are the pre- and post-ganglionic fibers of the parasympathetic, is it really wordy, but it's really important for you to follow each one of these words. Are the pre- and post-ganglionic fibers, do you have a picture of that in your mind? Here on figure 15.2, right? Here's the pre-ganglionic, here's the post-ganglionic. Of the parasympathetic nervous system, cholinergic or adrenergic? Cholinergic because the neurotransmitter that's used is acetylcholine. Yeah, that's what this diagram nicely shows. Okay, how could you describe the difference between the pre- and postganglionic neurons of the parasympathetic nervous system? So we want to go over to this slide, go to the very bottom row, compare these two neurons, the pre and post. Right, do you see this to be where I have the cursor on 15.2? Here is the postganglionic fiber. Here's the preganglionic. What's the difference do you see in structure? Myelination. One has it, one doesn't. Which one has it? The preganglionic fiber. Probably a good idea to say it out loud, right, because it's kind of a mind twister. It's a tongue twister as well. Right, the preganglionic fiber is myelinated. The post is unmyelinated. What's another difference? The preganglionic fiber is longer. It goes all the way from central nervous system right to the effector organ and maybe even inside the effector organ. The ganglia could be inside the effector organ. And that's why the postganglionic fiber for parasympathetic outflow is short. All right, so that would be a good way to answer that question. Okay, I do want to show you something about the outflow pathway of the parasympathetic nervous system. Now, how does parasympathetic information leave the central nervous system? We mentioned it. How does it leave the central nervous system? What areas can it leave the central nervous system? Through the sacral outflow or cranial nerves. Right, and, oh, here's part of it. Maybe I can find a little bit better picture. Can I find a little bit better picture? I can't. All right, so I'm just going to stick with this one. All right, so here's parasympathetic nervous system. I know it's parasympathetic nervous system because I see nerves leaving the cranium. All right, I don't see it leaving the sacrum. It's not on this diagram. All right, but that's just the way it goes. So here is the preganglionic fiber in this dark color. Here's the postganglionic fiber, and where are these fibers going to? Glands, okay, cardiac muscle, and smooth muscle. There's smooth muscle in the lungs. Right. Just like a typical autonomic, these are the effectors of the autonomic nervous system. And again, how many nerves does it take? Two, the preganglionic and postganglionic. Right, pre and post, and what can you tell me about the postganglionic fiber in the heart in terms of length? It's really short. And the preganglionic fiber is always going to be myelinated, right? Okay. Okay, so these are nerves. So there is an important parasympathetic nerve that goes to the heart. Oh, what's the effect of parasympathetic nerve on the heart? Slows the heart rate down, right? And so what cranial nerve, right, brings that information, that parasympathetic information to the heart? You can trace it back. Okay, vagus nerve. Ah, vagus is not on this slide. Okay, tell me by number first. Yeah, cranial nerve number 10. That just, you should just burn that into your memory, right? Just remember, that's a good one just to memorize. All right, and then another thing you should memorize is what is the name of cranial nerve number 10? And somebody told us already, it is the vagus nerve, right? Okay, and it's the vagus nerve, cranial nerve is number 10, because people traced where this nerve is going, and it's going all over the body. Okay. And because it's kind of wandering around all over the body, innervating the effector organs all over, it reminded somebody of a vagabond, which kind of wanders around all over the place. And so vagus and vagabond are pretty much the same thing. Cranial nerve number 10. So that's the important one. 3, 7, and 9 also have parasympathetic outflow. All right, so that's pretty good for the parasympathetic nervous system. Let's go on to the other division. All right, sympathetic. The sympathetic nervous system does not issue from the cranium or the sacrum, but there are nerves from the thoracic region and the lumbar region. So that's why sometimes we call that the thoracolumbar nervous system. Let's look at a graphic pretty quickly of the parasympathetic. Oh, here's the remainder of the parasympathetic nervous system. I didn't see that. Okay. Here's 15.4, and it just zooms in. So here is cranial nerve number 10 wandering around all over the place, and then here are some more parasympathetic nerves leaving S2, S3, and S4, going to some organs. All right, in your pelvic cavity, so mostly for reproductive organs, but also the urinary bladder. And again, what can you see? What can you tell me about the postganglionic fiber for this parasympathetic? It's really, really short because the ganglion is really inside that organ. Okay, so that's part of the cranial sacral or parasympathetic nervous system. What about sympathetic nervous system? Parasympathetic nervous system. Let's take a look at this. It's still parasympathetic. Sympathetic nervous system. It's got to be someplace. Ah, I like this. Okay, so how can you tell when you look at 15.7 that this is not the parasympathetic nervous system? Because I don't see any nerves coming from the cranium or sacrum, right? That would be parasympathetic. But I see nerves leaving through the thoracic and the upper divisions of the lumbar division. So sometimes we call this nervous system the thoracolumbar nervous system, and it is the sympathetic nervous system. Okay, so that's where it comes from. And here are the ganglia. These ganglia are all connected together, and they're on either side of the vertebral column, and they form a chain, right, which is unlike the parasympathetic nervous system. So sometimes we call these, well, we do call these the sympathetic chain ganglia. Right? And why do we call these ganglia? How could you analyze this slide and tell me that there's a ganglion here? Because I see a preganglionic fiber, a postganglionic fiber, and if I look at that postganglionic fiber, I can see the cell body in there, right? And a group of cell bodies in the peripheral nervous system is called a ganglion, and since this is exclusively for the sympathetic nervous system, we call this the sympathetic chain ganglia. Okay, and when I look at this, it almost reminds me of the spinal cord, right? It's on either side of the spinal cord, so this is a spinal cord for It's an auxiliary, you could think of it as an auxiliary spinal cord for sympathetic outflow. Okay. All right. So here is a nerve leaving the thoracic region of the spinal cord, goes into the sympathetic chain, and there it synapses, and then it goes out via the postganglionic fiber all the way to the heart. All right, so here you can see that the postganglionic fiber is really long. It's not dinky like it was for parasympathetic. All right, and notice that the color of the pre- and postganglionic fibers is different. What is that supposed to signify? That there is another difference between pre and post, and that is pre is myelinated, post is not myelinated. Right. So if you look at a bunch of sympathetic nerves of postganglionic fibers, are they going to look gray or are they going to look white? They're going to look gray because they're not myelinated. If you see a group of sympathetic nerves, the preganglionic nerves together, are they going to look white or gray? Yeah, they're going to look white because they're myelinated. All right, so I'm going to leave this slide up. Let's keep comparing some of the differences. Okay. The ganglia, right, are far away from the target organ. Is that true? Ganglia are near the spinal cord, and the postganglionic fiber is really, really long. Right? The sympathetic chain, we see that here. The parasympathetic nervous system doesn't have anything like that. And then here is one other thing that you should notice. All right, so where I have the cursor right now on 15.7, how would you describe these nerves where I have the cursor right now? These are the preganglionic fibers, right? Preganglionic fibers, and you can see them in kind of a dark color, right? And here I see the postganglionic in a lighter color. Are the colors the same, but just the intensity changes, or are they different colors? They're the same color, okay, just that the postganglionic are a little bit lighter. All right, let's look in this region. So here are the preganglionic fibers on the left-hand side of the sympathetic chain ganglia. Now, what about these fibers on the right-hand side? Are they light-colored or dark? They're dark, which means that these are still the, which one, the pre- or postganglionic fiber? Yeah, so sometimes the preganglionic fiber passes straight through the sympathetic chain, right? But how many neurons does it take to get to the effector organ? It takes two, right? So there is another set of ganglia outside of the sympathetic chain, right, where the postganglionic fiber originates, and then here we see the unmyelinated postganglionic fiber, which is long, going to the effector organ. So there can be two kinds of ganglia. There can be ganglia in the sympathetic chain. Sometimes we call these the paravertebral. These are on either side of the vertebral column, paravertebral. These ganglia, right, not in the sympathetic chain, these are in front of the vertebral column. So sometimes we call these the prevertebral. So paravertebral and prevertebral are a little bit different. Right, prevertebral outside of the sympathetic chain. All right, so these nerves that pass straight through the sympathetic chain go into a prevertebral, sometimes they're called a collateral ganglion. Collateral and prevertebral are the same thing. These nerves have a common name because they're kind of special, right? Because here you have all these preganglionic fibers. These are what we call splanchnic nerves. Right? Splanchnic, do I have it on? Don't have it on this slide right here. Here, splanchnic. S-P-L-A-N-C-H-N-I-C, splanchnic. All right, so a splanchnic nerve, here's a pretty good question. What is it, a preganglionic or postganglionic? fiber that's carried by a splanchnic nerve? A splanchnic nerve carries preganglionic fibers, and is it parasympathetic or sympathetic or both? It is purely sympathetic. Yeah, so splanchnic nerve is a sympathetic nerve, right, that's going to a prevertebral ganglion someplace. Okay. I needed a good cough right there. All right. So What is the neurotransmitter between the pre and postganglionic fiber for sympathetic? Is acetylcholine, just like in the parasympathetic nervous system. All right, and then here is another synapse between the postganglionic fiber and the effector organ. What neurotransmitter is released here? That is norepinephrine. All right, nerve fibers that release norepinephrine are called adrenergic. Nerve fibers that release acetylcholine are called cholinergic. So usually we think of the sympathetic nervous system as being an adrenergic system because all of these postganglionic fibers release norepinephrine. It's typically how we think of it. All right, so what are some of the effects? All right, well, we saw that parasympathetic effect on the heart was to slow it down. What's the sympathetic? That's going to be easy. It's going to be opposite. It's going to increase heart rate. All right, we said parasympathetic was excitatory to the digestive system. So that means sympathetic is inhibitory. Sympathetic increases respiration. What about parasympathetic? Decreases respiration. And sympathetic causes pupil dilation. What about parasympathetic? Pupil constriction. All right, so I want you to just memorize these four things. And we know that the preganglionic secretes acetylcholine. Okay, most postganglionic fibers release norepinephrine. There are a couple examples of acetylcholine, but not so important in this class. All right, how would we characterize the parasympathetic nervous system? How do we characterize it? Rest and digest. And here is how we're going to characterize the sympathetic nervous system, the fight and flight nervous system. So you don't have to memorize each one of these effects on an effector organ. Just think of these two different kinds of conditions that you might be in. If you're presented with a life-threatening situation, right, you would want to run away or fight that particular threat. So what should happen to heart rate if you're going to all of a sudden embark on this drastic physical activity? It should increase, that's right. And digestion, when you're faced with this life-threatening situation, should blood go to your heart and skeletal muscle, or should it go to the digestive tract to help you digest food? Yeah, it should go to your heart and muscles, right? So sympathetic is inhibitory for digestion. Right, and respiration, should it be easier to breathe or harder to breathe when you're faced with a life-threatening situation? Easier, right? Because all those skeletal muscles are going to need oxygen and get rid of CO2. And as in terms of pupil constriction or dilation, when you're presented with a threatening situation, should your eyes constrict so that you don't see very much, or dilate so that you can really appreciate everything that's going on around you? Dilation, right? So fight and flight versus rest and digest are really good ways to characterize these two different nervous systems. So you don't have to memorize the effect on each of these organs right here, right? You can use this as a guide. How would you describe the difference between the pre- and postganglionic neurons of the sympathetic nervous system? Well, we saw that the preganglionic is short and myelinated. The post is long and unmyelinated. The post also, right, has divergence. It has branches. It can go to different organs or many different parts of one organ. And the parasympathetic was just one axon terminus going to one location on one organ. All right. Well, we're going to be interested in a little bit of more detail of the sympathetic chain ganglia in this class. All right, so we're doing pretty good. We got some of the nice basics down. Well, I tell you what, I'm going to show you this slide. All right, so here are the vertebral bodies. Here's the spinal cord inside the vertebral canal. And then here we have some roots, right, that leave the spinal cord. Here are some rootlets. And so this is 15.6. So here are rootlets. Rootlets join together to form the, what do we got right here? Here is a root. Now, you got two different kinds of roots. Remember, you got a dorsal root and a ventral root. So what root do I have the cursor on right now? the ventral root, and now you should tell me what the function of that ventral root is. Is it mixed, is it sensory, or is it motor? It's motor, same thing as efferent, right? So there are efferent nerves. So signals are leaving the central nervous system, and in particular, we're talking about sympathetic outflow, right? And then it gets into the spinal nerve when the two roots join together. Here's the spinal nerve, and then I see the rami. Here's the dorsal ramus. Here's the ventral ramus, right? And so these, the spinal nerve and the rami are mixed because they have signals of both the sensory and motor roots. Okay. And then here is the sympathetic chain. You see them, these on either side of the vertebral column. Hence, we call these sometimes the paravertebral ganglia because they're on either side of the vertebral column. And you'll also see a couple pathways from the spinal nerve or the ventral ramus of the spinal nerve into the sympathetic chain. Do you see a difference between these two connections that go to the sympathetic chain? Do you see any difference between them? Anything? I see a difference. If I see a difference, I know you can. What about the color? They're different colors. That's right. What are the two colors that you see?
White and gray.
White and gray. Oh, what could you relate white and gray to? Myelinated or non-myelinated, right? All right, so here is the white ramus communicantes. Does this carry pre-ganglionic or post-ganglionic nerve fibers? These are the pre. That's right. So the nerve fiber, the cell body is in the gray matter, lateral horn of the spinal cord, leads through the ventral root, goes into the spinal nerve, then into the white ramus communicantes, which is the lateral one of this pair. It enters the spinal cord, and there it might synapse. If it does, then the postganglionic fiber has to find its way to an effector organ, so it has to rejoin that nerve. So it leaves the sympathetic chain, right? And this is the more medial branch of the communicantes, and it goes into the, well, it could go into the ventral or dorsal ramus, right? And that would carry it to the effector organ. And what can you tell me about this gray communicantes? It is non-myelinated, so it's a nice gray color, right? So it's an interesting scheme that happens. All right, so these are what we call the rami communicans or rami communicantes. It has a couple different names. So white is the preganglionic, the gray is the postganglionic fiber. All right, I want to go back to a previous slide, which I haven't shown yet. 15.5, a little bit more complicated. Well, what do we see? A whole bunch of visceral organs. I see a whole bunch of yellow stuff all over the place. Here is the vertebral column. Right, and when we get down into the thoracic region, what's on either side of the vertebral column? The sympathetic chain ganglia. Do you see like a chain of ganglia right here and right here? Maybe, how about if I zoom in? Okay, that's not bad. That's better. I think that's better. Sympathetic chain ganglia in the thoracic region. Okay, I want that to go away. And what else do I see? Here is... let me zoom down to this region. Ah, nice sympathetic chain ganglia here and here. Sometimes we call that paravertebral. But look at these ganglia, right, anterior to, this is the aorta. It's anterior to the vertebral column. It's in front of the vertebral column. So these can't be paravertebral. We're going to call these the prevertebral because they're in front of the vertebral column. And sometimes they're called collateral. Collateral and preganglia are the same. Okay, here is a pretty good question. Let's see if you can remember, but I've been talking a lot, so I don't know if you've memorized everything I said just yet. All right, but here are some nerves coming from the sympathetic chain into the prevertebral ganglia. These nerves all have a common name. What are these nerves? These are what we call splanchnic nerves. Yeah, splanchnic nerves, right? So they carry sympathetic information to the prevertebral ganglia someplace. So these splanchnic nerves are preganglionic fibers going to the ganglion, and then after the ganglion you have the postganglionic fibers going to the effector organ. (Clears throat) Let's look at a particular outflow pathway. Let's look at this one. Well, what do we see? Do you see a spinal cord, 15.6? Do you see a spinal cord anywhere on here? Here is, right, the gray matter deep in the spinal cord. Here's white matter, right? Gray matter, what makes up gray matter? Nerve cell bodies and dendrites. Do you see a nerve cell body anywhere? How about right here? Here's a nerve cell body, and it makes sense because it's in gray, and it's in what, the lateral horn? The thoracic region of the spinal cord has lateral horns because that's where sympathetic nerves originate from. So that sympathetic axon is going to leave the spinal cord. What root is this motor fiber going to leave the spinal cord? The ventral root, right? And then it joins the spinal nerve, gets into the ventral ramus, and it gets into the sympathetic chain. And how does it get from the ventral ramus into the sympathetic chain? Via the white ramus communicans, because this nerve fiber is myelinated. And here is another nerve cell body. So what neuron is this? Here is this dark one is the preganglionic fiber. What is this one over here? The postganglionic fiber. And what is the color of this ramus? It's gray. So this is the gray ramus communicans, right? The white one over here is signals going into the sympathetic chain. The gray one that's more medial is the nerve fiber leaving, and that would be the postganglionic fiber. It gets into this nerve, and the nerve will carry it to whatever part of the body that it should go to. Okay, so nerve cell body in the spinal cord in the gray matter. All right, so that's one particular scheme. Here is another thing that can happen. All right, so here we have maybe that same level of the spinal cord, nerve cell body in the lateral horn, and the axon leaves via the ventral root, goes into the spinal nerve, then into the ventral ramus, right? And since it's sympathetic, it's got to make its way into the sympathetic chain ganglia. It does via the white ramus communicans, right? And there in this ganglia, it does not have to synapse. These nerve fibers can arise one or two or maybe even three levels through the sympathetic chain. That's why these little pathways are here. Or it can descend. And there it might synapse with a ganglia which is superior to the one where it entered. Right, so here I see the postganglionic fiber. And how does a postganglionic fiber leave the sympathetic chain? Via the gray ramus communicans, which is this medial one, into the spinal nerve, carrying it to wherever it's going to go in the body. All right, so how many neurons does it take to get from central nervous system to effector organ? Two, right? And the junction between the two is what we call a ganglion. What's the neurotransmitter that's used? 100% of the time it is acetylcholine from the preganglionic fiber. What is it at the postganglionic fiber? What neurotransmitter is released by the postganglionic fiber? Norepinephrine, right? For sympathetic outflow. Right, there are a couple other little schemes. Right, so here is where it synapses in the sympathetic chain. Here is a nice example of what I was talking about before. Let's analyze this slide. This is 15.6B. Right, so here is the spinal cord, and the cell body is in the lateral horn, gray matter, and it leaves the spinal cord via what root is this? The ventral root. And so here's an axon. Is it myelinated or not myelinated? This is the preganglionic fiber, so it's myelinated, right? Enters the spinal nerve, goes into the ventral ramus. It goes into the sympathetic chain via the white ramus communicans. But now this preganglionic fiber doesn't go up or down, doesn't synapse, but it passes straight through. All right, so here is still the preganglionic fiber passing straight through. And it's going to end up in a prevertebral or collateral ganglia someplace in front of the vertebral column. So what do we call this nerve that links, that this nerve passes straight through the sympathetic chain to this prevertebral ganglia? What is this nerve always going to be called? That's a splanchnic nerve, right? So splanchnic nerve is always sympathetic. It's always preganglionic fibers, right? So here's that prevertebral ganglia. Here's the cell body of the postganglionic neuron, and then it leaves, going to its effector organ. All right, and this is a relatively long axon, right? Because this ganglia is far away from the effector organ. It's right up against the vertebral column. Okay. So here is an overview of that sympathetic outflow, right? So sympathetic we know to be thoracolumbar. These nerves enter the sympathetic chain ganglia via, how do these sympathetic nerves get into the sympathetic chain ganglia? There's a special structure that connects the two, and it is the white ramus communicans, right? Sometimes it passes straight through via splanchnic nerve. Sometimes it synapses in these ganglia. So here we have the postganglionic fibers, right? And the postganglionic fibers are long, because the sympathetic chain ganglia are right up against the vertebral column. Okay, so if I say thoracolumbar, what part of the autonomic nervous system is that going to be? Sympathetic. If I say craniosacral, what part of the autonomic nervous system is that going to be? That's going to be parasympathetic. All right. Okay, and don't forget, almost in every case, it needs two neurons. Here is an exception to that rule, a pretty important exception to that rule. And here is a nerve, a sympathetic nerve, that's going to go to the adrenal medulla. And the adrenal medulla, where can I show you? Maybe I can, do I have adrenal medulla here? Oh, I have adrenal medulla. All right, so here is the vertebral column. We haven't studied all of these systems yet. Here's the vertebral column. You should recognize this to be the diaphragm. What's the diaphragm separating? The thoracic cavity where the lungs are and the abdominal cavity. Inside the abdominal cavity, or very close to it, we have kidneys. These are things that produce urine. And sitting on top of the kidneys are the adrenal glands. Right. Okay, so here is an adrenal gland. Adrenal gland has a couple parts. It's got a superficial part and a deep part. Can anybody remember what we call a superficial part on an organ? Superficial part? Oh, this is the one I wanted to see. Okay, 15.8. Okay, I see a superficial part and I see a deep part in the adrenal gland. And here's that adrenal gland sitting on top of the kidney. Right. So if this was a bone, what would you call this part of the bone? The superficial. Yeah, cortex. Right, and so this is the adrenal cortex because it's the superficial part. Here is the deeper part, and can you tell that there's a difference between them? Structurally, I see a big difference, which means what? The function is different, and the function is a lot different. So we're going to just consider the adrenal medulla right now. All right, so let's find our way to the adrenal medulla from the central nervous system. So we're in the spinal cord, central nervous system. Here is that nerve cell body in the lateral horn. It leaves the spinal cord via the, what root? Ventral root, goes into the spinal nerve, then into the ventral ramus, makes its way into the sympathetic chain via, what is this little structure here? The white ramus communicans, or white ramus communicantes. And look at this. Is it synapsing in the sympathetic chain? No. Right, it passes straight through, so the preganglionic fiber passes straight through. So what kind of nerve is this right here? That's a splanchnic nerve going all the way to the adrenal medulla. So how many nerves did we use right now? Just one. But what did we say? How many should there be? There should be two. Here is sort of an exception to that rule. The postganglionic fiber are these cells in the adrenal medulla. But the cells in the adrenal medulla don't carry nerve impulses. When acetylcholine is secreted on these are called chromaffin cells, they release epinephrine and norepinephrine that gets picked up by the circulatory system. So for this particular sympathetic outflow pathway, there's only a preganglionic fiber. The cells of the adrenal medulla, right, act like the postganglionic fiber, but they don't send nerve impulses anywhere. They release chemicals that get picked up in the blood. Typically, what do we, well, we didn't cover this yet, but does anybody take a guess at the name of a chemical that is secreted by a gland that gets picked up by the circulatory system. It's got a general name, and yet this is part of the adrenal gland, but I really want to know something about these molecules of epinephrine and norepinephrine. Since it's picked up by the blood, we would actually like to call these things hormones, right? Hormones are secreted by a gland. They're distributed by the body via the circulatory system. All right, so here is something interesting. What did the first thing that you learn about norepinephrine? What was it? It was a neurotransmitter, right, from the postganglionic fiber. But here, now norepinephrine is acting like a hormone. So goodness gracious, what the heck is norepinephrine? Is it a neurotransmitter or is it a hormone? Okay, yeah, it's got to be both. Sometimes we call it a neurohormone. So here is a really super example of the interface between the nervous system and endocrine system, which we can't really separate. And a lot of times in a lot of classes, we don't learn the anatomy and function of the nervous system and then the endocrine system. A lot of times the chapter is called the neuroendocrine system because they are connected together in certain parts of your body. Here is one example. Okay, so here's an example where you don't have a postganglionic fiber, right? It's just the cells of the adrenal medulla act like it, and then it releases norepinephrine and epinephrine into the circulatory system. And once it's in the circulatory system, where does it go? Where does epinephrine and norepinephrine go? Once it gets into the blood, where does it go? Where does blood go in your body? Pretty much everywhere, right? So here is a sympathetic signal that goes everywhere in your body. And what was one of the characteristics of the sympathetic nervous system? Okay, what was one of the, compared to the parasympathetic? Oh, I want to go all the way back. Okay, all the way back to this slide. All right, so here's sympathetic. You see all these branches right here? The sympathetic nervous system is supposed to go everywhere at one time. All right, as opposed to the parasympathetic, it's discrete. It just goes to one organ. So this third row in figure 15.2 shows that these sympathetic signals, epinephrine and norepinephrine from the adrenal medulla, go everywhere in the body. It affects all the effector organs, smooth muscle, heart muscle, right, and glands. So here is the exception of the rule, right? That includes the adrenal medulla. You got a preganglionic fiber that's myelinated, right? That's relatively short, and it goes all the way to the adrenal medulla. So here's a nice splanchnic nerve. There's no ganglia, there's no postganglionic fiber. When the preganglionic fiber enters the adrenal medulla and releases acetylcholine, it causes these cells to secrete epinephrine and norepinephrine, and then that sympathetic signal goes everywhere in the body, right? And the parasympathetic nervous system that I see over here has no such thing because it's what? It's just a discrete system. It just goes to one organ at a time. Okay, so that's pretty much the autonomic nervous system. You got to study this over the weekend and answer all these questions and ask me a lot of questions next time because this might be the most complicated chapter we've looked at so far. Certainly it's very wordy. Okay, sign-in sheet is going around. Have a nice weekend. And I'll turn some of these lights back on. See you Monday.